It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
First thing for me is I want to hit a cultural reset button. Second thing is we got to get the leak stopped. If we don't get the leak stopped, I am a business person, and so I will take dramatic action to stop those leaks. And then the third thing is I'll be traveling with the president this week, and we're going to focus and refine the messaging from the White House. He's one of the most effective communicators that's ever been born, and we're going to make sure that we get that message out directly to the American people. And I think that arbitrage spread, the gap between how certain people think of him and how I see him, or say like someone like Ivanka sees him, that will start to narrow, sir. So I'm going to be very, very clear with people. As far as I'm concerned, that staff has amnesty. We'll see how they do with me at the helm. If the leaks don't stop, I'm going to pare down the staff because it's just not right, Chris. I think it's not fair to the president. It's actually not fair to America or the people in the government. I'm not going to be able to stop the leaks or in the intergovernmental agencies and all that other stuff. That's a whole different ball of wax. But something's going on inside the White House that the president does not like, and we're going to fix it.
All right, that was the new head of communications at the White House, Anthony Scaramucci, and I'm going to say a lot about that in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Oh, lots happening, and I'm going to do my best to give you some perspective, the perspective that I have, you know, at this point. Things can change, but you never know. Sean Spicer, of course, resigned last week, and that was jarring to some people. And I think, honestly, I have to say, when Sean was put in that position, I was not a fan. Didn't know him personally, but I knew that he worked for the RNC. I know how the RNC operates. I know that they are untrustworthy. They are rhinos, that he worked for Reince Priebus, who I did not trust and still don't. And so, but I thought that Sean actually did a good job. He really kind of won me over. I thought he did a great job. But all the time, people behind the scenes were expressing concerns because he was so tied into Reince Priebus, and because Reince is I'm sure he does a lot of things good, but he does a lot of things that are not good. So it's a mixed bag. So Sean Spicer stepping down was, I wasn't sure how to feel about it myself. I'm sure some of you feel that way too. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? And because he was so against Anthony Scaramucci stepping into the role of communications director and said that he's in part that he resigned because of that, then you just wonder. So then I hear that Anthony Scaramucci is very liberal on global warming, on gun rights, on he actually tweeted some support for Mrs. Clinton some time ago, that he had criticized Donald Trump, and on it goes. So those were causes for concern, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe the president has appointed another New Yorker who is really going to end up opposing him and pulling him to the left. Well, the jury's out on that, except that I have to tell you that I watched him. I probably watched it 3 times yesterday, his interaction with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday. And I came away with a little more assurance, and I'll tell you why. And, of course, the jury's out. We have to see him in action. But basically, on the issue of Chris confronted him on his tweets the fact that he had deleted a lot of tweets that seemed to indicate support for global warming, support for limiting gun rights, etc. And so he went through, yes, he said, yes, I did eliminate those because my positions have, for one thing, have changed. Some of the positions have changed. But the most important thing is that my positions on those issues are a distraction and they don't matter. I am here to serve the president, and whatever his policies are, that's what I am going to be doing. I'm going to make sure that his policies are honored, including the wall. He said something about the, I forgot the language that he used about the president, but he's locked on the notion of building a wall, and that's where we're going to see that through. And then, of course, on the issue of leaks, he came down hard. He said he actually was more firm in the interview with John Dickerson of CBS News than he was with Chris Wallace. On CBS, he said he'll treat leakers this way. They're going to get fired. I'm just going to make it very, very clear, okay? Tomorrow I'm going to have a staff meeting, and it's going to be a very binary thing. I'm not going to make any prejudgments about anybody on that staff. If they want to stay on the staff, they're going to stop leaking. And so I think Scaramucci was at one point, he's a financier. He came from a humble background on Long Island, and he's a tough-talking guy like Trump. He's a gentleman. He looks good on camera. He looks like a polished New Yorker. But he's a scrapper, too. And you saw that with Chris Wallace yesterday. He really managed Chris in ways I have not seen other people manage him, because I think I'm not a fan of Chris's. Just not. I think Chris is rude and kind of squirrely. Yeah, how about that? You write that down, look it up. Like a grown-up, like an older pajama boy. That's the way I see Chris Wallace. He's always into the gotcha mode. Not interested, really, and talking about things that are good or bad for America, but in always, you know, getting someone, like his dad used to, Mike Wallace. And I don't prefer that. I don't think that's good journalism. I think it's self-serving. And so he tried to do that with Scaramucci, and Anthony sort of stopped him, and he said, this is what I hate about Washington. You destroy me, I destroy you. And it's a gotcha game. He said, I don't like that. I want to change that. So he was very clear. I felt he was very honest, and I'm actually optimistic this morning. You know, I'm more optimistic than I was when I first heard how this is all coming down. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who has amazed me too. I think Sarah has done an excellent job, and she's moved into Sean Spicer's role, which was press secretary, and then Scaramucci will be running the whole team. And I think, you know, based on what he said yesterday, he's going to be really tough on these leakers, and God bless him for that. Somebody's got to be tough on them. And we have reason to believe that they are, you know, in the White House, they are not Obama holdovers in the White House now. That's in other agencies. In the White House, these are Republicans who are rhinos. I don't know this for a fact. I'm speculating with you. I believe that the leaks that are coming from within the White House are coming from people who are disloyal to President Trump because they didn't support him. And they don't care if he goes down. So that's kind of what I think is happening here. So here's Anthony Scaramucci coming along, and we'll see how he does. Now, let me just say that this week is a big week in Washington and Capitol Hill, because there are going to be a lot of testimony. In fact, let's listen to Cut 7.
July 26th is the date that Paul Manafort, the former chairman of the Trump campaign last summer, and Donald Trump Jr., the president's oldest son, will testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. Now, this is going to be a fascinating bit of testimony, and it's going to be in public session. The committee is just announcing it just a few moments ago. They are going to be part of seven or eight witnesses who will be questioned that day, but certainly they are the two who are the closest members of the president's inner circle. And of course, one of the things that the Senate wants to ask about is that meeting from June of 2016 that we've been talking about so often, the meeting with the Russian government lawyer, the lobbyist, and others here. So that is going to be the first opportunity that senators have to question them on Capitol Hill before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
All right, so you can imagine that they're salivating because, Donald Trump Jr. is going to be testifying, also Paul Manafort, and also Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law. Now, interestingly enough, Kushner and Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort, who was once with the campaign, have agreed to these interviews. And now some people are saying that that's a mistake. They should not do that. They should not do that, put themselves in that position. But it looks like it's going to be behind closed doors. But I'll tell you something really interesting. I always laugh, you know, as I told you, when things are not really funny. The Judiciary Committee also called Glenn Simpson. Now, Glenn Simpson is the guy who runs Fusion GPS, who is the organization that compiled this false dossier on President Trump, who's tied into the Russian attorney, the latest so-called connection with the Russians. I heard a report from Ned Ryan this morning on Fox and Friends, and Ned says a lot of what I've been telling you, but he says it so well, Glenn Simpson, by the way, is pleading the fifth. He's pleading the fifth. He's not going to come before this committee. So let's listen to Ned Ryan kind of describe this. Cut one. Ah, we don't have clip one. We don't? All right, so we're having a little bit of technical trouble. So let me just say that Fusion GPS, okay, here we go again with me telling you this. This is a Democratic-connected organization that was paid in part by some opponent of Donald Trump and also originally by a Republican running against Donald Trump who they don't name. I suspect Jeb Bush. Sorry, I just do. This is where John McCain got his hands on this dossier. It was just really ridiculous. It was pulled from Google. Just ridiculous things that slandered the president. And then, of course, it was given to the president, to the intelligence agencies, and they made sure they leaked it everywhere and every which way. And finally, oh, good, we've got it. So let's let Ned tell it because he does it better than I do. Ned Ryan.
They claim that they're an opposition research firm. I call them a disinformation firm. They've been around since 2009. And the reason that people need to know more about them is because of this fake dossier, the Steele dossier, or some know it, the Golden Shower dossier, which is a 35-page memo that Fusion GPS paid Christopher Steele, a former MI6 agent, to put together. And that dossier, Steve, is really nothing but a collection of Google search terms, conspiracy theories from left-leaning websites, Wikipedia clips, and quite frankly, some of us are starting to suspect information fed to Steele by Russian counterintelligence agents. The thing that's troubling about this, Steve, is that somehow this dossier found its way into the hands of John Brennan and the CIA.
Right.
Brennan then put it into a top secret file, got it to the Obama White House, put it into the bloodstream of the Obama administration. Then James Clapper and John Brennan felt the need to brief people on this fake, unsubstantiated dossier. And again, then you have to question, are they terrible intelligence agents or were they politically motivated? Then, Steve, this dossier finds its way into the hands of the FBI later in the summer.
That's right.
They use this as proof, as part of their justification to surveil Carter Page. The thing that we found out a couple days ago, the FBI is still using this unsubstantiated dossier as a checklist to tick off as it's talking to witnesses in its ongoing Russia investigation. There's something very wrong about this. Well, there's a couple interesting connections. You again, the Russian lawyer. Fusion GPS was working with this Russian lawyer on the Magnitsky Act, did not file a FARA. It looks like they might have potentially been acting on behalf of a foreign nation, Russia, to promote its interests. So there's a lot of different interesting connections. They're even linked to the Maduro regime in Venezuela. So the interesting thing that I want listeners to also understand is Christopher Steele, who wrote this dossier, end of April filed legal documents in British court system saying this document should never have been made public Fusion GPS should never have passed it around.
Right.
Okay, does that all make sense? Let me just see if I can make this, can tie these knots together so that it makes more sense. This week, the Senate is going to be interviewing Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort, Donald Trump Jr., because, you know, this Russian connection and this latest story about this meeting with this female Russian attorney who was supposedly had information on Hillary Clinton, and this is what they're making much of. So Kushner and Trump Jr. and Manafort are all agreeing to be to appear before the committee. Right or wrong, they're going to do it. But this Glenn Simpson, who runs Fusion GPS, who's connected to the female Russian attorney, who's connected to Maduro in Venezuela, who's connected to the Democratic Party, is pleading the fifth. Meanwhile, the FBI continues to use their information. And again, this is the information that John McCain ran over all the world trying to get and to get into the hands that could damage Trump. It's just an amazing story. But Glenn Simpson is refusing to testify. So I wonder if he'll be concerned about that. I wonder if that will fold into the narrative at all. I wonder if CNN will report that. I can't somehow doubt that. There is a lot of news today, a lot of interesting things. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel in March, and we'd love for you to come along with us. You know, One of the frequent questions I get when I talk about our trip to the Holy Land, people say to me, Tim, is it safe to go on your trip? To which I respond, you know, we won't be in New York but a few hours. So we're going to Israel. Israel is as safe or safer than any other place in the world. They take their security very, very seriously. So if you'd like to join us as we see Jerusalem and Bethlehem and the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and all the other places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible, we'd love to have you join us. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or for our brochure, call 800-FAMILIES. That's 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Here's Steve Russo with Real Answers.
I was thumbing through the Sunday paper when a small ad caught my attention. In bold letters was the headline subject, Life After Death. The small type went on to promote a book entitled Heaven and Hell by a man I'd never heard of. After a brief description of the content and a couple of endorsements, the ad concluded by encouraging me to send $5 to an out-of-state address to obtain my own copy of the book. But why spend $5 when I already have a book that contains everything I need to know about heaven and hell? It tells me how I can know for sure that I'm going to heaven. Plus, it tells me how to get the most out of life here on earth. What book contains all this insight about life's most important questions? God's Word. The Bible has the real answers we need about life.
To learn more about Real Answers, check out Steve's website, www.realanswers.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
True at McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truitt.edu today.
Snowflake parents are melting across the Lone Star State. It's legal for schools to paddle kids in Texas, and one school district is about to make good on the policy. Misbehaving students could soon be getting a swat on their behind. Three Rivers Independent School District says misbehaving children will get a swat from the principal, but only if parents give their permission. I say, God bless Texas! Public school classrooms have become war zones. Kids running wild, disrespecting teachers, fighting, cursing. It's anarchy! Back when I was growing up, the principal at Hope P. Sullivan Elementary School patrolled the hallways with a fiberglass paddle. There were no police officers, no metal detectors, just grown-ups, putting the fear of the Lord in students, along with the knowledge that whatever punishment we got at school, we'd also get once we got back home. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Congressman Adam Schiff, he joins us from Los Angeles. Congressman, your committee will be talking to Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law. What do you want to know from him?
There's a lot we want to know. We certainly want to know about several of the meetings that have been alleged to have taken place. Obviously, the meeting with Donald Jr. and the several Russians that we now know were in that meeting. But also his meeting that was alleged to have taken place with the head of the VEB Bank, a sanctioned Russian bank, as well as that alleged conversation he had with the ambassador about setting up a secret back channel to Russia. We'll want to know whether those meetings took place, whether other meetings took place. We have a lot of ground to cover. His counsel has said they'll only make him available for 2 hours, so we expect this is just going to be the first interview.
All right.
There's a great many questions that we'll have for Mr. Kushner.
Okay, well, that's Mr. Adam Schiff, who now is leading the charge on the investigations in the House. Sandy Rios back with you. How did that happen? Because don't the Republicans control the House of Representatives? Isn't Devin Nunes the chairman of that committee? Where is he? What happened to him? Well, you might wonder. I kind of wondered. I've wondered for a long time. I knew he was under ethics investigation because, you see, he boldly went to the White House and did a press conference and said there are some There's some really cause to be concerned here. There's some illegal unmasking as far as I can see, and it looks pretty widespread, and I'm concerned. And so for that, he came under ethics investigation, and guess who brought the charges? It was MoveOn.org and Democracy 21. So they filed a charge against Devin Nunes. I didn't know this before today. I did not know these particulars. So they filed a charge against him, and so now he's under investigation for his ethics because you know how reliable MoveOn.org is, the Soros organization. So Devin Nunes has been held silent all of these months, and now we're learning, according to Adam Credo's report this morning, that Nunes, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee handling the Russian probe, was sidelined from his leadership in the probe more than 3 months ago. And then it talks about how the head of the Ethics Committee is Representative Ted Deutch, the top Democrat anyway. I don't know who the top Republican is, but they're kind of being quiet, aren't they, that top Republican? And, of course, Leader Paul Ryan, you know, there's nothing he can do about it, I'm sure. But Ted Deutch has made it his mission to stop Devin Nunes from being back on the Russian investigation. I can't imagine why, can you? Just can't imagine it. So Deutch has been pretty much slandering Nunes for so-called a breach of ethics. He has accused him of releasing classified information in that press conference, which is really, I have to say, patently ridiculous. Of course, MoveOn.org agrees, and so that's all that matters. And Paul Ryan can't do anything about this because Paul Ryan can't seem to do anything about anything. So here we go. Deutch said he wanted Nunes off the Russian probe, and he's used the Ethics Committee to make that happen and prolong the investigation to keep Nunes under an ethical cloud. That's what the Free Beacon was told. Deutch has further implied that President Donald Trump has committed an impeachable offense, adding fuel to the claims that he's too biased to be a leader in what's supposed to be an independent investigation of Nunes. The Ethics Committee is supposed to be a neutral adjudicator, and this looks like a textbook case of prejudgment. How can Deutch claim to be impartial? And then moving on, it says, it describes this as a languishing ethics probe. This is what happens when Republicans trust Democrats to play fair. Everyone knows Nunes is squeaky clean, and lawmakers involved in intelligence know it most of all. This is a source, the Free Beacon said, could only discuss the sensitive matter on background. So Democrats promised Republicans they'd do a quick probe, find whatever, and everyone would go back to work. But Democrats don't want Congress to get back to work, and they also don't want to keep Nunes. They want to keep Nunes in limbo, so they're holding up everything. Meanwhile, the Ethics Committee, listen to this, you'll love this, has thus far declined to investigate similar claims that Representative Adam Schiff, the guy you heard on the tape who's taking the lead, who's kind of become famous, he's the one talking about the probe all the time because Devin Nunes is not allowed to speak because he's being investigated, you see, for ethics. So Representative Adam Schiff of the House Intelligence Committee, the ranking Democrat, wrongly disclosed classified information to the press when he publicly discussed the contents of a reported phone call between former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. The Ethics Committee has ignored that matter, despite public testimony from former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, who said publicly it was classified. The original complaint so there you go. You see how the game is played? So now Adam Schiff is taking the lead, man. He's so objective, you know, on this Russian probe, and he's going to be taking front and center in the investigation because the House is going to do their own investigation of this so-called, they are doing, of the so-called Russia connection. It is just, it's amazing. You know, President Trump lashed out last week at Republicans who are not protecting him, and they aren't. They aren't. Do you think Mitch McConnell has done anything to protect President Trump? Do you think Paul Ryan has? Do you think the leadership of either side has? They don't do anything. They don't fight back. They don't defend because, you see, they sort of hoping he'll go down because then they can put their own kind in. And so this is the fight. I've described it to you many, many times. And their own kind is Republican establishment. They have their own way of doing things. And what they want to do is not what you want. They don't want to build a wall. They don't want to stop funding for Planned Parenthood. They don't want to repeal Obamacare. The list goes on and on. They do not want to do what the American people elected them to do. So By the way, we're going to put this Free Beacon story on our Facebook page. Top Dems slow rolling ethics probe to delay investigation into Obama leaks. And there you have it. And I want to this also came across my desk last week because this is important. It's been six months since President Trump was elected. Certainly, it is a slugfest to try to get the right things done. It is. People are in there fighting, swinging. Just pray for the good people in Washington who are trying to make sure that things are done the right way for the right reasons. But I have to say, this is kind of a partial list. There's no way I can make it complete. But I'll give you just a taste of the things that have been accomplished in this last 6 months. Neil Gorsuch was appointed. Trump donated his salary. We told you about the way it was being spent just last month. He's been bringing accountability back to the government. He's been spurring jobs creation. He signed Buy American and Hire American. It's an executive order, which is prioritizing the interests of American business and workers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has increased 17% since Election Day, hitting new highs 25 times already this year. Since January, the economy has added 863,000 jobs, including 820,000 in the private sector. The president has done tons on cutting down job-killing regulations. He signed 14 Congressional Review Act resolutions into law, ending burdensome Obama-era rules and regulations, more than all the other presidents combined. He withdrew from the Paris Climate Accord. He's been trying to control regulatory costs. He's signed an executive order mandating that for every one new regulation, two old regulations must be eliminated. He has acted aggressively to increase exports of energy resources, including coal. He's expedited permitting and approval of processes of liquefied natural gas. He's unleashed oil and gas development in the U.S. by expanding access to resources. He approved the Keystone XL, the Dakota Access pipelines. He signed an executive order mandating future pipeline work be done by American workers with American steel. He kept his promise to coal miners and rolled back the Obama administration's steam protection rule. He's opened up free trade. He withdrew from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We spent a lot of time actually talking about that, how bad that treaty was. He withdrew from it. He is renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement between Canada and Mexico. For the first time in 14 years, American beef imports have returned to China. Reduced illegal border crossings by 53%. ICE has removed over 2,700 criminal gangs compared to 2,057 in all of fiscal year 2016. And there's a lot more detail, but I'm just giving you what I just saw as highlights. And the nation's veterans, they've attacked, you know, the Veterans Administration. People are being fired. I think upwards of 500 people who have been reported for doing terrible things to our veterans and not giving them proper care have been fired. He's put America first in foreign policy. His speech in Poland, the ceasefire in southwest Syria, which he brokered a ceasefire in southwest Syria, you will remember. And also his strong leadership in the Middle East, and we could go on and on about all he's done overseas. But you see, this is 6 months, and I just gave you just a couple of headlines. There's a lot more to what's actually been happening because I wanted you to be encouraged. Sometimes it's easy to get discouraged. And I also want to bring an update to you on this transgender situation in the Congress. It really is stunning still to me that last week the United States Congress voted, or let's just say they did not vote on an amendment to stop funding transgender surgeries and hormone treatments. Unbelievable. And 24 Republicans joined with the Democrats to support that? This is on the big defense authorization bill. Six Republicans did not vote on the measure at all. Now, here's the thing. Let me just tell you that there are good guys behind the scenes working furiously to try to turn this thing around. They can't do it in the same way. They're looking for other methods, and that they're working on it right now. And, of course, they're being fought by House leadership is terrible on this. It really is unbelievable. I just have no words. I do have a few words. I just can't can't use those words. I just can't believe they wouldn't do something to stop this. This is just ridiculous at a time when we have such a, our Navy is so small. Our nuclear arsenal is in pathetic shape. I haven't even talked to you about that. And they're going to spend money on transgender surgeries and giving hormones to transgender soldiers and recruit transgenders to fight. Are you kidding me? And money spent on altering uniforms to accommodate. I mean, this is just unspeakable. And so here's the thing. Politico is reporting, and I know this from other sources, that that a group of Republicans in the House are doing everything they can to do something. Supporters now think they could possibly see a different outcome if the amendment comes up again. They may be right. Six Republicans did not vote or were absent, including Representative Sam Johnson of Texas, Raul Labrador of Idaho, Mark Sanford of South Carolina, David Velladio of California, Rodney Davis of Illinois, and Steve Scalise of Louisiana. If possible, some of those members would vote yes if it comes up a second time. But that's just one if they do the amendment again. But they're also working to put it in a rule. I'm not going to go into House procedure on that. It's not worth it. I just want you to know, bottom line, there are some really good guys trying to do something about that. And on the issue of Obamacare, because that's going to come up this week too, they expect probably a vote tomorrow. Now, last week, a report came out to say that the parliamentarian in the Senate, see, they want to pass the bill under what they call reconciliation, which means they'd only because Mitch McConnell can't change the rules, you see, because he's sworn and committed to those rules. And our friend, what's his name? Angelo Cordovilla, who was our guest on Friday, talked about how they're hiding behind the Senate rules and how they any of them can be changed. And, of course, Mitch McConnell is the biggest hider behind those rules. So now they're telling us that the parliamentarian has found some provisions in this new act that would make it not possible to pass the reconciliation. And one of those is a clause that would defund Planned Parenthood and block federal money from helping to pay for insurance policies that cover abortion. By the way, that's just short-term. It's not forever. It's just short-term, just enough to get conservative votes, I might add. But that's another issue for another day. But could I be really clear here that the parliamentarian does not have the power? She's unelected. She has an advisory role. She does not have the final word. They act as though she does, but she does not. The president pro tem of the Senate is Vice President Mike Pence, who can at any time say, we hear you, but we're going to move and vote on reconciliation. We're keeping that provision in. He does not have to do what this person, Elizabeth McDonough, appointed by Obama or by the Democrats, they don't have to do what she says. It's advisory. That's it. And yet they use this to hide behind. It's just amazing to me. Now, what bill are they going to vote on? Well, I was reading this morning, as I feared, they're not going to be voting on straight repeal, at least not at this point. They want to still get through their horrible bill. That's what they're working on, you see, because Senator McConnell and the rest of leadership are committed to K Street lobbyists with the healthcare industry, and there's a lot of money to protect and preserve here, you see. So this bill, the old bill, whatever iteration, the last bill that they failed to have the numbers on, that's what they want to... what they want to vote on, then they're just tweaking it, of course, to make it better, of course. Of course, better from whose point of view, I'm not sure. But the vote will take place tomorrow, as best I understand it. I don't think there's any reason to believe that they're going to be able to get 51 votes. I don't know what's changed that they would do that. But, of course, I'm sure that Senator McConnell is doing his best to make that happen. But, of course, they can't. The first priority couldn't possibly be to just... go to the 2015 repeal bill. Couldn't do that. We have to try again to come up with some sort of a convoluted counter to Obamacare, which the Republicans will own. I'm against this. I know some people are not. I know Ted Cruz has joined in because they had some provisions that pleases him, and I'm glad about that, and I'm sure he's made it better. But overall, I'm telling you, I'm still not. I personally, this is my personal opinion. I want them to repeal it. I want them to repeal Obamacare, and I want the free market to solve this problem. That's the side that I find myself on. All right, this is Sandy Rios. Don't go away. There's more. But wait, there's more. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them." My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The state where assisted suicide has been legal for 2 decades, and the state that first legalized abortion in 1969, years before Roe v. Wade, has made another move to cement its spot as the unmatched leader in the dystopian culture of death. Oregon has passed a law to force insurers to cover 100% of abortion costs, regardless of medical necessity. That means abortion there is now totally free. It's either covered by one's insurance or by the state through the Oregon Health Authority. Congratulations, Oregon.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Did you know there are 9,000 year-round volunteers serving with Operation Christmas Child nationwide? That's right. And local teams are still growing as God calls new volunteers to directly connect with His global purposes. As part of a local team, how would you like to invest your time, skills, and passions so that millions of children can receive a gift of love and a message of hope? To learn more about volunteer opportunities in your area or to apply, visit SamaritansPurse.org/volunteer with OCC.
I want to say congratulations to the American Family Association on 40 years of ministry.
Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council.
I cannot imagine what America would look like had the American Family Association not been here. I greatly appreciate Don Wildman's vision and his son Tim for carrying that vision forward. So join me in congratulating them on 40 years of ministry, serving the Lord, and serving America.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Few things are more impressive than a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier. The occasion of the commissioning of a new one happens infrequently, and when it does, the event should be seen as a cause for national jubilation, as it marks a significant improvement in our country's ability to project power and thereby promote peace through strength. And so it was on Saturday when President Trump presided over the induction into the fleet of the USS Gerald Ford. The high point for me was when ordered to bring the ship to life, the Ford's crew raced aboard, fanning out along the deck in a dazzling display of discipline and patriotic pride. God bless the Gerald Ford and those who will, having brought her to life, now bring her to bear to protect the lives and freedoms of their countrymen. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Just in, the FBI has seized smashed computer hard drives from the home of okay, it's the Information Technology Administrator for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Now, remember, there's been this huge scandal. The reason you haven't heard about it is because, you know, it's a huge scandal, and no one's reporting on it. And that's that these IT workers, these two brothers and their sister, their wife, this whole scam, working for the Democrats who had access to the entire, it's actually very dangerous. They think that these workers had access to the schedules and all the information for all members of the House. And they have gone back to Pakistan. Some of them were not quite sure where they are. They were receiving incredible amounts of money for the work that they were doing. In other words, way too much money, Their salaries were incredibly high for the work that they were doing, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz has refused to fire them, and now they have gotten the computers. They're bashed, but evidently the FBI's procured them, so that's kind of an interesting story. We'll get back to that later. I want to talk about Attorney General Sessions, because last week, of course, Donald Trump, in an interview with the New York Times, basically expressed his regret at Senator Sessions recusing himself from the Russian investigation and saying if he'd known he was going to do that, he would not have hired him, not have chosen him. And that was a pretty big blow to Attorney General Sessions, I'm sure. I think a lot of us were also just absolutely flummoxed when General Sessions stepped aside on that. And I've told you before, part of that process was that General Sessions, in an effort to be transparent and above board in everything, consulted the Department of Ethics official within the Justice Department. Well, we knew who those people were before he got into the department. And even still, it's just a cesspool of leftists. It's just an amazing resume. I've talked with J. Christian Adams with you about that, in itemizing names of the hundreds and hundreds of terrible hires done by Eric Holder, you can imagine. And so he consults with the department ethics officials, and they suggest he recuse himself. So he did. And I wish he hadn't done that, too. So Donald Trump, in that interview, you know, he just sort of says what he thinks, whether it's right or wrong. And I think it's probably been very hurtful to General Sessions, no question about it, because General Sessions and the 99% of the other things he's in charge of has just been knocking it out of the ballpark. There's no question about it. So Tucker Carlson did a commentary on this last weekend. Tucker did such a great job. I want you to hear what he had to say, because I think he's spot on. This is Cut 4.
Well, it's been overshadowed by news about war heroes and retired tailbacks, but the president has been in the news today, too, as he often is. Last night, he went after his own attorney general, Jeff Sessions, saying he was angry that Sessions had recused himself from the Russia investigation. If he had to do it over again, the president said, he would have hired someone else to be the AG. Stinging words, but this morning, Sessions seemed to brush them off.
Given what he said, what is your reaction to those remarks, and how seriously are you considering possibly resigning?
We love this job, we love this department, and I plan to continue to do so as long as that is appropriate.
How do you feel like you can effectively serve from here on out if you don't have the confidence of the president?
We're serving right now. I'm totally confident that we can continue to run this office in an effective way.
Now take a step back and you can kind of see how this all happened. The president is a 71-year-old political novice, and all of a sudden he's the subject of a vague, open-ended federal investigation whose goal may be to imprison him and his family. Ask anyone who's had an independent counsel on his case, and there are a lot of them here in Washington, what that's like. It's terrifying. The pressure is soul-distorting. You can wind up lashing out at the people around you, even, maybe especially, the ones trying to help you the most. So that's probably what's going on. And yet, attacking Jeff Sessions was still a useless, self-destructive act. The first rule in politics, as in war, as in life, don't shoot the friendlies. Sessions is the closest ally Trump has in this administration, one of the very few who even understands why the president won in the first place. Unlike most political appointees in Washington, Sessions made big sacrifices to work in this administration. A year ago, he was one of the most popular people in the state of Alabama, with a Senate seat he could have held forever.
All right, that's the first part of Tucker's commentary. I'm going to play the second part in just a second. I want to weigh in with this commentary from Citizens for Limited Government. Jeff Sessions is the best attorney general President Trump could have. He is doing the difficult job of unwinding the politicized mess left behind by his Obama-appointed predecessors. Rather than turning a blind eye, Attorney General Sessions is cracking down on illegal immigration, deporting MS-13 gang members and other illegal alien criminals, and ending the war on police. Sessions' recusal on matters related to the 2016 campaign and the Russian investigation, while perhaps unnecessary, underscores his commitment to restoring the rule of law, which, after the Obama administration's abuse of power, was sorely needed and was one of Trump's key campaign promises. Any attempt to remove him from office at this stage would be a catastrophic mistake. And then Tucker goes on to make another point that I want you to hear. Tucker Carlson.
Many on his staff didn't want him to endorse Donald Trump, but he did anyway, purely because he felt it was important. Session was worried about what an unsecured border and mass immigration would do to America, even though the biggest effects from those wouldn't be seen until decades after he was long gone from this earth. So he jumped in and accepted Trump's offer to become attorney general. He didn't do it to get rich and certainly not to become more popular. He instantly became less. You'll remember that many of his former colleagues in the Senate slandered him as a bigot during his confirmation hearings. As Attorney General, Sessions has been the rare person in the entire executive branch making actual progress implementing the agenda his boss ran on, because he's the rare person who believes in it. In an administration brimming with opportunists and ideological saboteurs, people who literally couldn't be less interested in what voters think, Sessions has never lost sight of the lessons of the last election. He's gone after sanctuary cities, he's enforced immigration laws, he's ended the Obama administration's attacks on local police departments, and a lot more. He's likely the most effective member of the Trump cabinet. In return, the president attacked him in the failing New York Times. That's not just criticism, it's an insult. It's also a worrisome sign that the president may be forgetting who is on his side. Goldman Sachs did not elect Donald Trump. America's long-ignored middle class did. Trump voters may find his tweets about the media amusing and well-deserved, because obviously they are, but they're not the point of this exercise. The point is to shine some light on the broad middle of this country, on the millions of normal people who are hurting and who could badly use an ally in power for the first time in a long time. Now, the hope is that what happened yesterday was just a stress-related aberration, the political equivalent of yelling at your kids when you had a bad day at the office. If so, it will not be hard to fix this. Going forward, just pay a little less attention to the New York Times, pay a little more to Matt Drudge. And for God's sake, lay off Jeff Sessions. He is your friend, one of the very few you have in Washington.
All right, I just thought that was worth playing the whole thing. I agree with Tucker, and I think that what he said there at the end is true, that, you know, the president still is in the realm of New York. With the New York Times, regardless of what he says about them, they're like the god to people in New York. I mean, it's amazing. People brag and boast about reading the New York Times. It's part of their culture, their inner, that's cool people read the New York Times. Everyone reads the New York Times. You get your marching orders from the New York Times. I remember years ago when I first started doing radio, I asked the question, you know, why is it that when you turn on the nightly news, at the time it was ABC, CBS, and NBC, you hear the same three stories right up. How do they do? Do they call in the morning and say to each other, what shall we cover tonight? How does that happen? And the explanation to me was they get it, and I believe it was Bernie Goldberg who told me this. They get it from the New York Times, Sandy. They all read the New York Times, and that sets the pace for all three networks. And so they have controlled the thought of America for so long. They are a failing paper. They are full of liars. The editorial board is untrustworthy. Almost, as I remember reading the last time I read this, that a huge proportion of them are gay men. So they have an opinion. And they're not objective. But President Trump still comes from that vortex where he believes, you know, I think in his heart of hearts, he wants to be approved of by the New York Times. So I think it was a mistake to do. Why would you do that interview with them and say that about General Sessions to them? I agree with Tucker on this. They're not his friends. They never will be. Never will be. And then the next day, the Washington Post did their share. So they print a headline, Sessions discussed Trump campaign-related matters with Russian ambassador, U.S. intelligence intercepts show. Well, that sounds pretty damning, doesn't it? Because Sessions said he didn't. So that's the headline. Sessions discussed Trump campaign-related matters. And then you look down into the text. It's a long story. It's a long story. And then you find out, well, here it is. It's a leak of Sergei Kislyak's conversations with some other Russians overseas, in which Kislyak says he talked to Sessions about this stuff. And then later down in the article, I mean much later down, it says officials emphasize that the information contradicting Sessions comes from U.S. intelligence on Kislyak's communications with the Kremlin. And they acknowledge that the Russian ambassador could have mischaracterized or exaggerated the nature of his interactions. So you've got two things going here. You got a leak of this conversation to the press, and then you have an admission that this is if it's even true, even what they said is characterized accurately, that Kislyak, well, he might have exaggerated. He might have. And the headline is Sessions discussed Trump campaign roulette. Not that he may have, not that Kislyak says he did. And so you see how this goes. And they want Sessions out. Sessions is a terrible threat to them because Sessions will do the right thing. God bless Attorney General Jeff Sessions. All right, I want to get in one more story here before we run out of time. Over the weekend, the Jerusalem Post reported this incident. Let's listen.
Tonight, we arrived on the scene and we found three patients in critical condition. We immediately started life-saving procedures. In addition, there was another wounded person who had a stabbing in their back, and she was transported to the hospital in stable condition. The assailant was neutralized by a neighbor, and he was found with two or three gunshot wounds and was taken to transported to a hospital with a military ambulance crew.
You know, that actually doesn't even tell the story the way I'd hoped it would. This is a Shabbat, and it's when the family gathers, you know, on Friday, and I saw pictures of the table where they were sitting. And I saw graphic pictures of all the blood that was being mopped up. It was a celebration of a new grandson. It was the husband who was stabbed, the wife, and I think the husband was killed. And I'm looking, because I thought he was going to tell those details. So it was one Palestinian who barged in this personal home and murdered these people. And I think three are dead. It's just a horrific attack. And then here is the deal. The State Department comes out with an annual report on global terrorism, and this is what they say. The State Department, in its latest annual report on the global terrorism situation, blames Israeli security policies for stalling the police process and claims that Palestinians rarely incite terror attacks. The State Department characterizes Palestinian calls for terrorism and violence against Israel as rare, stating explicit calls for violence against Israelis, direct exhortations against Jews, and categorical denials by the Palestinian Authority of possibility of peace with Israel are rare, and the leadership does not generally tolerate it. All I can say is, are you kidding me? In fact, I would just say that a senior congressional source said, this report is comically farcical and detached from reality. We expect efforts to whitewash history at Israel's expense from the UN, but not from our own State Department. This is happening under Tillerson. It's still Obama appointees there. I wanted to play this last. In fact, let's try just a little bit of this. This is an Israeli, young Israeli, in his patrol car. This was sent to me yesterday. He's patrolling Israel after the knife attack. Let's listen to at least part of it. Here it is.
Hey, guys, it's Goldstein here. It is Shabbat, and I normally wouldn't send a video out, but I think the world needs to understand what exactly is going on here. A family, multiple families were attacked in a house in a community just like mine a few hours ago. A 19-year-old Arab savage with a knife slaughtered three people in their home, simply celebrating the Sabbath. So I'm out right now, fully armored up, lit up for the whole world to see, to protect the children in this community while they sleep. Not one Arab community in this entire land needs a camera or a fence line or a radar system or a security patrol to protect them from the evil Jews that are trying to sneak into their homes to kill them at night.
All right, that's all we have time. And that's just an amazing little clip. We'll put that on our Facebook page. You should watch that. But the fact that the State Department says that Palestine does not incite these acts of terror is just unfathomable. Unforgivable. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.